Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hey, Jay, how do you?
Oh, you know, doing. And you?
Oh, I'm fine, just fine. So I'm getting ready to have a nightcap. What are you drinking?
Oh, well, I made myself my typical bourbon and Diet Coke. This one is only remarkable for its the fact that I used a flat can of Diet Coke. But, you know, we're in severe financial conservation mode at this point. So, you know, when there's half a can of Diet Coke from last night sitting on the countertop, better use that one.
Yeah, well, I gosh, that sounds, yes, dire.
Well, yeah.
That you would say that, because I was just looking at a flat bottle of tonic water. I'm having a gin and tonic. Actually, I'm having a gin and coconut water with a little tonic splashed in there. But you said via text message that you just had like the worst week of your life. And that got me to thinking that many horrible things might have happened, and I'm just wondering what's up.
Well, you know, I may have been maybe either dramatic or forgetful, or both, to say it's the worst week of my life, but certainly two really unpleasant financial issues have befallen us. Well, and they're sort of financial issues. They end up being financial issues have befallen us. A week ago, I had a friend over, actually my old friend Frank from Bloomington, from the Wayback Machine in Bloomington,
wow.
Who we now live here together, or at least in the same town here in Missoula. And he was over, we were having a drink, he was sitting on the couch, and he said to me, "Hey, Joey, what's that big bulge in your ceiling?" And I look up, and there was actually a like a water balloon hanging from the ceiling, except it was a water balloon made out of the latex paint.
Yeah. Does that sound
and
good?
Yeah. Yeah.
I
so,
think this is a leak in the roof, then, or?
There's a leak in, oh, you know, I think, well, who knows if a leak in the roof would be better or worse. I don't know. But this is in our living room, which is on the first floor.
Oh.
It was directly beneath the second floor shower that I installed myself along with the help from a friend when we built this house. It's a walk-in shower, and it was sort of my pride and joy of this whole house. And apparently fucked up the waterproofing, which, you know, I, of course, owned this tile company for quite some time.
Right.
And and we installed hundreds of these things. And, of course, you know, the one that has leaked is mine for whatever reason, which, you know, I haven't decided whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Because, you know, if it was somebody else, they'd be calling us up, threatening to sue us, demanding that we get over there right this minute and fix it.
Yeah,
with
well,
me,
well, actually,
yeah. So I think it's probably better that it happened to me. But in any event, so we've now got a huge gaping hole in our ceiling because we had to tear out a bunch of waterlogged drywall, and partly to just get it out of there, and partly to determine as much as we could from the underside what was going on, because it was not obvious from above. And as close as I can tell, it's the waterproofing of the shower pan, although it appears to be a slow leak, which those are always the hard ones to find. So, yeah, I mean, we've got thousands of dollars worth of stuff to fix there, and you know, it's not by any stretch of the imagination a you know, Katrina scale disaster like you all dealt with, but it was pretty significant, you know, especially given that we're trying to live on one income right now as Dylan is in school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, already falling behind. And then, you know, a week passes by, and I was walking out to my truck yesterday to get ready to go to a concert, and looked at my boat, my raft, which is sort of my, I don't know, it's like my one major indulgent, luxurious purchase that I own. And something looked different, and I realized very quickly that someone had stolen the frame off of it, which is, it's like this three-seat thing where there's a seat in the middle for the person who's rowing, and a seat in the front, a seat in the back, and all of these other little doohickeys on it. And it's about a $1,500 contraption that sits on the inflatable raft. And somebody had availed themselves of it. And, you know, the trouble, you know, compounds with both of these, because in the instance of the shower, we found out that our homeowner's insurance will cover the water damage, you know, so it'll cover like fixing the drywall,
yeah.
But it doesn't fix, it doesn't cover the cause of the damage, which would be the shower pan, which is by far the more troublesome and expensive part.
Yeah.
And then they also tell me today that that the raft frame was supposed to be covered under a boat policy, despite the fact that it was, you know, sitting on my property. So
it was stolen from right,
you know,
in front of your house, huh?
Yeah, from my yard. I'd taken it off of the raft to clean the raft to get it ready to to stash it for the winter, ironically, you know, to put it someplace truly safe.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to throw out plenty of caveats, because I of course know that compared to coming home or to dealing with, for example, what you all dealt with Katrina, compared to some of the health issues that friends and coworkers have dealt with in their families, this is, you know, not as bad a week as some people have had, but
sure.
Shit has just sucked.
That's why it's good to have tragic friends and so forth, to put things in perspective a little bit. But
mm-hmm.
It's good that you have that perspective. I was most worried when you said that you know, somebody had died or something.
Yeah.
That is tough to deal with. You know, it's like we're all living one paycheck away from disaster.
Yeah.
It seems like, so I can relate. I can relate all too well.
Yeah.
In fact, it's funny that you had mentioned Katrina right after the ceiling, because we got some roof damage after Katrina, and it took me 4 years, but I finally got around to fixing the damage, the hole in our ceiling.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hole in the kitchen ceiling. It was just kind of raggedy looking,
yeah,
you know, paint hanging down and damaged. And I thought it was drywall up there, and it took me 4 years. Now that we decided to put the house on the market, I decided I need to fix that unsightly ceiling that we've been ignoring for years.
Yeah,
and I got up there and started scraping, and discovered that it's not drywall; it's plaster, and so parts of it were quite dusty.
I
figured nothing needed to really be replaced. As I had one day to do this, you know, really. Not really one day, but I had a bunch of stuff that I was doing over the course of a week, and I had allotted my time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be a one-day project, and when I started scraping and discovering that things were a little messier than I thought it would be, and then all of a sudden I opened up a hole, so then I did have a hole in the ceiling.
Yeah.
It was a rather small hole. There was lath underneath, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, it turned out I had everything I needed on hand to patch that hole.
Oh, wow.
And I ended up, it ended up taking longer than I had hoped. But all in all, it took me one day, spread over the course of 3 days and working on other things. I would say it was about 1 day's worth of work. And I got it looking good again. So I was really actually happy about that, because usually when I get involved in some of these house projects, they get away from me, and it just starts taking much longer, and so forth, and so it can become very, very frustrating, very stressful. And fortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then just to follow up on that, you know, our house is on the market. We had an open house last weekend or 2 weekends ago, and nobody came.
Oh dear.
And we hadn't had any offers on the house, so we knocked $10,000 off the price. We had another open house yesterday, and we had a couple of people come by. And now tomorrow night we've got a third person coming by to take a look at the house tomorrow night.
Oh, cool.
Great, because, 2 days ago we actually had what I thought was going to be our first visitor, somebody coming to look at the house.
Mm-hmm.
They were out on the street and took one look at it and decided they didn't want to come in.
Oh, wow.
They weren't even interested. They're like, hey, we're going to take a pass. See ya.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it. But, because I thought it was a fairly nice house, but they really didn't look like the prospective buyers that we had imagined. Anyway, that's what's going on with us. And there also in your life is some good news, kind of.
Well, yeah,
your extended family there, huh?
My brother, Alan, who anyone who saw old episodes of Rocks would probably recognize him. Anal, is what we called him. It's not anything like physical, but never mind.
Well, he's your brother.
Yes, he's my brother. And if you switch the consonants in his name around, it spells anal instead of Alan. It's hilarious. Anyway, so the... he had his second child on last Tuesday, the 22nd, a healthy baby boy by the name of Samuel, and everybody seems to be just thrilled and happy, and he's apparently quite a little quiet, contemplative, easygoing child, which is great for them, and it seems that even their 5-year-old daughter, who was having trouble dealing with this impending arrival, sounds like she's doing great. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. In fact, she had hoped to have Anal Alan or whatever whatever we might call him on here for a 3-way conversation, but that just didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to keep pestering him because it would be nice.
He's about as hard to get a hold of as you are.
Yeah, you know, I realized this recently that I know how difficult it is to reach me and how frustrating it is for people like yourself, because I deal with it from the other end with my own brother, there was a time when long ago he would, respond to emails and such. Then he stopped responding to emails and informed me that really the only way to communicate with him was with instant messaging. Well, I didn't have access to that at work. They kind of shut it down pretty much, at least back then. The only way that actually we have figured out sort of a common communication medium is, strangely enough, within the fantasy world of World of Warcraft, it's an online massive multiplayer fantasy game, kind of Dungeons and Dragons like.
Indeed, I think we've outlined this on a previous conversation.
Yeah.
And the upshot of it is that you. These days, you communicate with him, and he doesn't get back to you.
Right. Right. So.
How do you, of course, now he's got an excuse.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, although I actually have run into him in World of Warcraft a couple of times. So, I actually, at one point last night, asked him, in the in-game chat, if he was willing to do one of these conversations with us, And he was doing something else, I guess, or something. He didn't respond to that and didn't respond to a couple of other questions that I asked him. And then, So
he has found time to log on to the Spanish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
That's funny.
Yeah. But, you know, I suspect that that to him, as to me, you know, the late night log on to that game is often just, you know, a lot of people, their version of what I do that for is, you know, slouching on the couch for an hour and just channel surfing and watching idiotic programs that, you know, like, you avoid the History Channel and Discovery because you don't really want to be engaged. You just want to stare at something for a while. And that's essentially what that game is for me a lot of times at night. So.
Huh. Well, I'd love to check it out someday, but I never have.
Yeah. It's a brain sucker. So, anyway, it's a, you know, I realize it's interesting that, that this, as I describe what's happened in the last week, and then contemplate calling this the worst week of my life. Well, you know, of course, I could just as easily say that about, you know, the week that my dad died, or the week that my grandmother died, or,
sure,
you know, some of the other rather big issues like that have happened in the past. But I think it's probably a reflection that I am my father's son, that financial loss seems to be sort of the most nagging and difficult thing for me to deal with. And I think part of that is also, honestly, that, you know, I knew that my dad was going to die by the time he did, and it was his time, and same with my grandmother.
Well, that's true, yeah. And, you know, you can certainly be forgiven if in retrospect it seems like a little bit of hyperbole.
Yeah.
At the time, you were certainly, you know, feeling just, you know, hard-pressed by,
yeah.
You know, actually a strangely similar thing occurred to Christy. She's a teacher, of course, in public schools,
mm-hmm.
and we went in Sunday to, she was doing some class work, and we discovered that the malfunctioning air conditioner had sprung a leak once again in her room, and there was a waste basket that she had set out to catch potential drips that had overflowed, you know, filled up with water and just overflowed, and there was water, basically an entire bookshelf full of books was destroyed, and her classroom was a swamp, and so forth. It was really, really nasty. And of course, there's no janitorial staff in there on the weekend. It was just her and some other fellow teachers trying to clean it up as best they could. It was really pretty nasty.
Oh, geez.
And certainly not thousands of dollars of financial loss, but several hundred, and it was
uh-huh.
fairly demoralizing. And of course, we don't expect to be reimbursed in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, like 6 weeks, what is it, 6 weeks, 8 weeks into the school year, and a bunch of teachers at that school still haven't gotten a paycheck. So,
oh, dear.
Yeah, they're rather up in arms about that. And
is it a private school? Or?
No, it's a public charter.
Wow.
It's run by an out-of-state entity, like a number of these charters are. You know, New Orleans
yeah.
now has more charter schools than any place in the country. I think over half of our public schools are charters now.
Meaning what? I guess I'm a little bit confused as far as structurally how that affects who she's paid by.
Well, it's all about structure, actually. The structurally, a charter school, it has its own board and is kind of an independent entity. So these there are nonprofit corporations, and I suppose there's for-profit corporations as well. I'm really not clear on that. But anyway, there's corporations, that educational management corporation, that run these schools in some cases, community organizations and so forth. that are put together, you know, for the sole purpose of running the school. And then instead of being a part of a monolithic school system, which is run at the, you know, city or state, city or county level, or like a lot of our schools, our failing schools, as they call them, were run, taken over by the state, these independent charters are like their own little entities, like their own a school district of one school, or in some cases, several schools that are banded together. But nevertheless, it's a tiny little school district. So instead of one school district, one public school district to contend with, we now have like 30 or 40. So it's, and they all have their own governance structure. So it's quite bewildering for the general public, as you can imagine. Before this devolution, the Orleans Parish Schools, New Orleans Public Schools, was the biggest employer, I believe, in the city. Really huge, you know, it's like 100 plus schools. And the school board itself was plagued with corruption issues and so forth. Millions of dollars stolen, siphoned away from the children. Those people are being brought to trial now and so forth, and it's pretty ugly. But yeah, nobody is really sure, you know, if this new system is better. Charters are given 3 years, basically, to prove themselves, and if they don't meet certain benchmarks, then their charter, I think, is revoked. And we're only coming up now where that three-year thing is kind of coming due. So the jury is still out, you know, on how well this works and so forth, and there's a lot of people who are very critical of the system. But there's a lot of people who seem to think it's doing better than it ever has before. And being married to a teacher, I see it from one perspective, but it's kind of hard to know what's really going on.
Yeah. Well,
that's, it did bust up the union, though.
It did what?
It busted up the union.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. The so the people who you know, the union, the pro-union folks are certainly very anti-charter.
Yeah, I would understand why.
But, you know, the union was no great shakes before this all happened anyway, although they might have been better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Yeah.
Still, were not, they had fallen far from their glory days. And they did have glory days back 30 years ago or 40 years ago or something like that. They did great things. Just not so much recently.
Really?
Yeah. More like part of the problem than to me, but, you know, there I go again, thinking for myself.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I've never worked at a union place, so I don't know much about it firsthand. I've always been sort of a believer in the concept and, you know, the spirit behind unions. I've also long heard complaints from those who work in companies and such that have unions about the, about what, you know, what are they really doing for us and is it worth it and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. No, I like the idea of unions, but in practice, they do seem to have issues. But, you know, that's not a very sophisticated analysis on this one. But speaking of unions, we have our own little labor union at Rox. Well, it's not really a union, but we do have a laborer, Lee Magic Lawmaster. He's been laboring away in Bloomington, Indiana. And we are just about ready to bring out the first season of Rox on DVD.
Nice. I have not heard this until now, so that's good news.
It's about time you did hear it.
Yeah. I think it's important that I flush the toilet right at that moment when you said that, too.
Yeah. That was very appropriate.
So
this is fixing to happen soon. I mean, it's been in the works for years. Of course, we already have season zeros already available as DVDs. That's the first 7 episodes. But it wasn't until we really moved out of the basement that that's what we're calling season one. Just those shows where when we were you and I were living together on North Washington Street, and the show was pretty crude at that time, but there was a lot of evolution happening in it as well. We were getting out and moving around more and so forth, and experimenting a lot. So anyway, it should be interesting. I think it's going to be in the form of, well, 2 sets of 4 DVDs each.
Nice. And, you know, maybe we should find some outtakes because, of course, most of what we recorded were outtakes.
Find some outtakes. Or, well, we did a...
Not outtakes so much as just footage that was never used.
Well, where are we going to get that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was
you mean
destroyed in your previous disaster.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. And then we also have the question of, you know, where are we going to find the time to go through all this... all these old footage. You know, the idea of Ragnaroks, of course, was to systematically go through all the stuff that never made it into episodes that was worth looking at. And, and of course, that task was not fully completed. But there were several hours of production that came out with Ragnaroks. Now, I have no clue where I could lay a hand on a copy of Ragnaroks, of any of the episodes of Ragnaroks these days, but I think that they're at BCAT or something. So.
Oh, I've got some of that.
You've got them. You've got them. Okay, there we go.
Yeah,
so
I've got whatever you sent me, which I think was about 2 hours of video.
You probably have all the Ragnaroks then. I figured we would. At the rate we're going now, it'll probably take us until we're old and gray before we get all of the TV shows that we made under the title Rocks out on DVD.
Yeah.
And, of course, by the time that happens, there'll be some new technology that enables the entire series to be put on your thumbnail or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I figured we could deal with Ragnaroks at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Excuse me.
Well, since we've talked about all this important stuff or trivial stuff, I was wondering if I could share something really important with you that's just
absolutely
been nagging at the back of my mind for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know there's all these online systems and so forth that we have where you're invited to rate things. Usually with some kind of star system, like 1 to 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can rate movies on Netflix or wherever. You can rate books Amazon or Goodreads or what have you. You can rate songs in iTunes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, we're just being asked to make these little snap judgments on things all the time.
Right.
And not that you have to or anything, but if you play around with these things like I do, you kind of it's a temptation because, of course, there are there's the promise, the beckoning promise of a reward if you do that,
mm-hmm.
which is that there's all these systems have kind of recommendation features built into them so that if you were to rate things using their little rubric, that you would then discover more things that you like and so forth. So, but I have a very hard time with that. For one thing, I have a hard time. It's like against my nature to pass judgment, you know, and to come up with such a simplistic thing, you know, 1 star, 2 star, 3 star, 4 star, 5 star, you know, just it just grates on me. So that's hard. And then there's also the question of, well, what does that really mean, those star systems? For example, when Netflix when I got started, you know, watching movies on Netflix, and you return them, and then they had a real cool system where they send you an email and says, hey, what did you think of when they get the movie back? What did you think of that movie? Rate it right here, mm-hmm. one to five stars. Well, there was no clue at the time. This is years ago. They didn't indicate what those stars meant. It was just given to be, figured out on your own. One to five stars. How hard can it be? So yeah. I thought, okay, I can figure this out. Five stars means it's excellent. Four stars means it's good. Three stars means it's kind of a mixed bag. Two stars means it's not so good, and one star means it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? They eventually one day came out with labels for those stars, and they didn't match up to what I just said.
Oh, dear.
So all my rating was in other words, based on a different idea. And by that time, you know, who knows how many hundreds of movies I might have rated. But anyway, the crucial thing was that three stars, that right in the middle. I
mm-hmm.
thought that meant, you know, I was thinking mixed bag. They define that as I liked it.
Ah.
The label that goes with that, I liked it. And I think what they're trying to account for is the right-hand skew, that people tend to rate things that they like and ignore things that they don't like, except, you know, occasionally the things that they passionately hate. But, I mean, that's true, right, that we tend to seek out and only rent movies that we think we're going to like.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have any skill in discrimination in what we actually rent, then there's going to be a skew in everything we rate towards the right-hand side of that little scale.
Yeah.
They call them Likert scales, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's named after some guy named Likert, I guess. But, very standard 1-to-5 scale that's used in all kinds of psychological evaluations and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that there. So anyway, probably the rating, I'm just wondering, first of all, what is the psychological effect on us of constantly passing judgment in this really shallow and superficial manner on all these cultural products? Secondly, the place where I rate things the most is probably in iTunes, just because you know,
mm-hmm.
there's all these music tracks in there and managing, playing around with my iTunes library is just kind of a fun thing I like to do when I've got a few spare minutes. So I was thinking, you know, as I went down the road of rating music, that I kind of had a Netflix experience with that as well. But it wasn't, I couldn't blame a corporate entity this time. It was just me. That my idea of what these things meant, it's just sometimes I would think one thing and sometimes I would think another. I was not consistent. Because, you know, what it seems like it would be really simple, but you've got so many ways that you could evaluate. I mean, there's technical quality or some kind of objective standard, right, of, well, this is good music. This is critically acclaimed
mm-hmm.
or not, you know.
Right.
This is cool or not, you know, kind of in the terms of the zeitgeist or whatever.
Yeah.
Or just plain, you know, I like this or I don't like this, which, of course, would be what you think it would mostly mean, since this is entirely for the personal use. But I mean, you know, why do you like something and so forth, and what does that really mean? Is that just a fuzzy, warm and fuzzy feeling that it gives you inside? I don't know. So then I finally decided that it might make more sense to have these ratings represent repeatability. In other words, to use it just as an indicate my desire of how much I want to hear that song again. In other words,
yeah.
after when I'm listening to any particular piece of music, do I want to hear more of that? Do I want to hear it more often, less often, or the same often?
Mm, yeah.
The same often, of course, that implies a kind of, I don't know, standard interval in which if you've got a library of music and you listen to it from time to time, eventually, you know, you're going to hear some of the same stuff again. How often would it take you to kind of like listen to the whole thing, or how, you know, what's the standard? So I just kind of set as a standard interval 1 year.
Okay.
And so then I'm thinking to myself when I'm listening to any particular piece of music, if I want to hear that again, yeah, you know, that's okay. That's an okay piece of music. I'm not burning up to hear it again, but sure, I'd like to hear it again in a year later in my life. It wouldn't kill me to hear it again. But you see already the variations on the theme, you know. I mean, I'd like to hear it again in a year, or I wouldn't mind hearing it again in a year, are actually kind of different. So that's the flaw, the fly in my ointment there, if you will.
Yeah.
So anyway, I bring that up because in the past, once upon a time, in this very series of conversations that we've had, you and I discussed the notion of music. What is it about music that makes people want to, you know, share it with other people? And why do, you know, certain songs, certain musical expressions, do we want to hear again and again? Whereas we wouldn't want to read the same book or watch the same movie again and again necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, that's, it's interesting because when you point out that standard of repeatability that you're trying to muster for yourself, to me it's vastly different in music than in television or film. Because to me, a film that I'd be willing to watch again, you know, a week from now, is pretty damned highly rated. Because
sure.
I just, you know, I don't feel like I'm not one to watch something over and over and over again in close succession. Whereas with an album, I mean, you know, lately, I've had the new album by that band Grizzly Bear in my CD player in my truck, and I just can't bring myself to take it out.
Yeah.
So I'm basically listening to it on the way to work and on the way home every day. And it's been that way for a week. So it's such a different standard that... But stepping back from all of that... I guess I feel like I have a really skeptical attitude about these, you know, star systems and user reviews. I mean, this may sound like the pretentious, self-serving thoughts of a guy who hangs himself out there as a professional critic.
You do this for a living. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, this past weekend, I had an experience. I was online looking for information about tires and what, you know, what tires would be good for my SUV for hunting season, given that I have... bald tires and a deathly fear of sliding off the road. You know, I was going on these sites that had all these user reviews where, you know, you basically, with tires and user reviews, you either get the 5-star, oh my God, these are the most amazing tires I ever bought, or, 1-star, this tire had a hole in it, and I'm pissed off. And pretty much nothing in the middle. And, you know, what it pointed up to me is that, you know, these people are giving user reviews of tires. There's no way that these people are, like, trying one set of tires for a week and then trading them out and trying a different set the next week and really comparing in you know, direct and sort of, you know, pseudo-scientific ways.
Well, you're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. I'm thinking tires is probably not a product that I would want. You know, tires are a product I would prefer an expert opinion on.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just not going to trust this Joe Average thing. I think the question is more, what about these cultural products? And after all,
even with cultural products, I mean, you know, usually I think that people skew. I'm not sure if they skew right on that 5-star scale, but what I do know is that, or I do have a hunch that people only really review things that they feel passionately about. And there are very few instances, I think, where somebody is passionately hateful about something that they have seen a film or listened to in music. And so it makes sense that, you know, the fans of Justin Timberlake are going to get on Amazon and rave about his new CD. Is it a meaningful, important CD in history? Probably not. But
really?
Well, yeah. Here I am showing my age in a weird way, though, because I don't think Justin Timberlake's actually had a new CD in years. I think he quit music, at least for some period of time or something. But anyway.
I wouldn't know. But but this is what you do for a living, of course, is you review stuff. Music
mm-hmm.
in particular, and put your opinion out there as more of an expert review.
Yeah.
I imagine when you're actually concocting these things, you are at least vaguely aware of these popular, you know, anybody can post their review websites and whatnot that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm certainly aware of it. I mean, I don't generally engage. I engage sometimes in iTunes, but solely for my own purposes, because I've found that, you know, when on shuffle, the things that I've given a higher star rating or a low star rating show up more or less often.
Exactly.
But beyond that, I don't do it for the simple fact. Well, it's simple to state, but probably complex to unravel. That I think that actually you've given a good defense of this, though. Star ratings are a lousy way to assess cultural product, because, you know, what is it really telling you? Is it telling you that that this is not an important film in history, or is it telling you that that person didn't share the same sense of humor with that filmmaker? Or is it telling you what is that standard? What is that scale? I mean, like you say, you know, you've gone through at least a couple of different versions of what you consider 5-star to mean and what you consider 1-star to me.
Exactly. And I have found that, you know, as far as online reviews of these things go, the actual, you know, the more sophisticated systems allow people to post reviews and then for other people to moderate those reviews and
mm-hmm.
say, this review is helpful or not. And so the ones that are most helpful kind of rise to the top. And they do tend to, in many cases, contain good information that helps you figure out what that particular cultural product is all about, because it's a review, it's
mm-hmm.
text, which is written, which is much more full of information and certainly nuance than a simple star rating is. The star rating thing is really so crude that it you wonder how good can it possibly be. And then, you know, is it just a question of it's not fine-grained enough? Because it brings to mind a friend of mine, a kind of a guy I vaguely know, who posted, I remember he posted on his blog, that, you know, his favorite music of the year. Here's my favorite, this is the albums that I like the most over the course of the year. And he gave them all a rating. And I was really impressed that, you know, a numerical rating, 1 to 10, a scale of 1 to 10, to 2 decimal points, right? I was really astounded that he was able to say, you know, this album, I would give an 8.93.
Ah.
What? I mean, my mind boggled at the time. Actually, I thought this is hilariously silly. But you know, as time has gone on, with the, you know, thinking of, well, if you've got 1 through 5 stars, it's so crude, but if you could have half stars, then you've got a 10-point system and so forth. And I'm wondering if maybe it's just my own sense of aesthetics that's crude. Maybe this guy just has a really refined sense of what he likes.
Yeah.
So he's able to put it out to a couple decimal points, because I don't think I could, but maybe if I applied myself. Someday I could get there.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, the other, just another factor in, you know, what are these people rating this stuff on? But a hugely important factor, in my opinion, is sort of what you were talking about, which is staying power. You know, when you read a review of an album that somebody's posted up on Amazon, for example, have they posted that after listening to it 4 times in a week, or 4 times in a month, or 40 times in a month, or over the course of 7 years, coming back to an album and learning more and more about it as they personally have grown?
And we've got recorded music now that's been out there for 100 years, so it's potential, you know, the potential is there for somebody to have really dug into something for decades.
Yeah, and I will say that I think that there are albums that I have thought on first listen were incredibly deep and important and wonderful, and, you know, because I pretty much have to base a lot of what I do on first or second or third listen, you know, I've given great ratings I don't use star systems at all. I just avoid that whole issue. But I've given sort of very positive reviews, only to find that, you know, they have no staying power whatsoever, and vice versa, things that have crept up on me.
Sure.
For one reason or another, I was skeptical but found that I kept turning back to it.
And I think the two keywords there are novelty and subtlety. As I started kind of just letting myself go with digital music, I thought I would reach a horizon, a natural limit to my interests. But what I didn't account for is the appeal of novelty. Something that I haven't heard before, something that's new, is always kind of interesting, always has a certain luster to it, and there's always new stuff out there. So there's really no limit. Subtlety. Sometimes stuff that doesn't grab you at first turns out to be the best stuff. It doesn't grab you at first because it's complex. But that complexity, of course, is what makes it so rewarding to hear again and again. And obviously, the more stuff that you listen to, the more that you're exposed to in life, period, the more subtle also your tastes become, the more sophisticated they might become. So, in other words, the more you listen, the more it affects how you listen.
Yeah.
And this is a problem as well. But I was taken especially by the fact that you said that you don't use a rating system, a crude rating system like that. That takes me back to high school days when I was, you know, we had the announcements at our high school on over the public address system, and the I think the student council or something ran it, and somehow or another, I really don't understand how this worked, but somehow or another, I ended up giving movie reviews once a week to the whole school over the public address system.
Wow.
And I would give everything a rating on the Everson scale, 1 to 10, and once I even gave something I guess a zero rating, so I guess it's a 0 to 10 scale. So anyway, I think you need to consider instituting some kind of system like that into your life, into your professional life.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it gives the people, the common people, Jay, something to really hang their hats on.
But it does, except for one basic problem. A lot of people will look at the star rating or whatever this rating system is. They'll look at the number, and they're done. And really, to me, the whole point of criticism should not be to simply level judgment upon something and to give your opinion. I mean, you know, this is where I have a real problem with all of these sites that want to know your opinion on this and that. And, your opinion isn't what matters. What matters is adding some kind of substance to the dialogue.
Yes, but Jay, you've got to make a living.
And in that sense, you know, classic criticism, the great critics weren't talking about whether something was good or bad. They were talking about sort of how what they experienced had changed the culture and what it changed for them personally, but also, you know, where we're going, what's going on.
Well, I agree with you 100%.
That doesn't match with a star system at all.
I agree with you 100% that is where the real value of criticism is, showing us how a particular work fits into the larger cultural fabric, what it means, what it means to you, what it means, what it should mean to me, what it might mean to me. But at the same time, Jay, you've got to earn a living, right? You've got to bring home the bacon. This is your profession here. So, of course, as your friend over here on the other side of the continent, I just want to see you succeed.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that you know, you got to throw the common man a bone out there, a little something to entice them. I mean, you know, Siskel and Ebert didn't rise to their prominence in our culture without their thumbs.
Right.
Very crude system, but, you know.
Ridiculous.
Perhaps it is, but you can still write your sophisticated reviews there, but, you know, if you've got a little system, it doesn't have to be stars, you know. It could be something that something like a star that you like, maybe smiley faces. Or
I thought about creating
bottles
a while
of
back. I thought about creating a system of ratings that had nothing to do with quality, but rather just random things, you know. So like, this movie has someone drinking a glass of milk in it, you know, so it's got a little milk glass symbol, you know, just things that don't really give you that, but at least, you know, if it's got a bunch of symbols next to it, maybe somebody would mistake that for a positive rating.
But, you know, nobody's, I hate to break it to you, but people are more likely to say, did you hear that Joe Nickel gave that whatever, that album, that performance, whatever, five pitchforks or whatever it is that you're using, than they are to say, did you see that sophisticated observation that you made there? I know it's insulting to your very craft and profession to point that out, but nevertheless, I think it is somewhat true. Here in New Orleans, we've got, you know, of course, this food culture here that's just out of control, and the local restaurant critic gives restaurants, he rates restaurants on 1 to 5 beans. Like a red bean, and like red beans and rice, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost impossible to get 5 beans, by the way. So,
yeah.
I mean, people really do, to some extent, look at, you know, how many beans this guy gives out, and it's a big deal. Maybe not as big a deal as it was or would have been back in the days, you know, the glory days of the newspapers, but still, I think it gets people talking and so forth, and, you know, it serves to popularize it a little bit. And I'm being partially facetious when I recommend you do this because, of course, I wouldn't purport to tell you how to do your job since I don't know anything. I don't know very much about it. And you're certainly the expert there. But I'm halfway serious in that it does seem to me a little flair, a little razzle-dazzle for the masses. Wouldn't hurt anything, Jay. It wouldn't hurt anything. And people who are going to read a review, they can read on to read that review. But, you know, just,
I don't know.
Just something people, I don't think anybody who's reading your reviews now will stop at the rating and say, you know what, now I know all I need to know.
That's possibly true. I mean, I also think, however, that, you know, stars tend to replace substance in what's published. And, you look at the magazines and newspapers that most obsessively use stars to rate everything, movies and CDs and art shows or whatever. I don't know if I've ever seen one using them for visual art shows, but
that would
anyway,
be awesome. That would,
you know,
be
you're
cool.
Talking about the entertainment weeklies of the world that give you two sentences that are supposed to give you a sense of the subtlety and meaning of some piece of artwork that somebody threw their heart into for years, and, you know, you get two sentences and however many stars, and that's it. To me, that just
it's brutal,
insultingly shortchanging, and, you know, it's a slippery slope. It's seen around the country that having talked with a bunch of arts journalists over the years. Usually the push for a star system is also a push for less information and more simplicity.
Yeah, that would suck. Well, let me ask you this. You do review art openings, art visual arts stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I recommend. Implement some kind of rating system only for those things, right? Not for music or anything else, but only for the visual arts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would certainly set me apart.
It would. You know, you could have, instead of stars, you could have, like, palettes or
right.
Berets or goatees.
Brushes.
Or something like that.
Yeah,
brushes, yeah. Yeah, that could get you a little notoriety.
Yeah.
In the visual arts scene and in the journalism world, I'm thinking that could raise some eyebrows. Get people talking.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And
well, Yeah.
Now that we've worked out all those problems, I think that maybe it's time to say goodnight and go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. It's like 2 o'clock your time.
Clear conscience tonight, Jay.
What's that?
You can sleep with a clear conscience tonight.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Knowing that we planned.
No animals were hurt in this conversation.
Well, maybe not in your end.
Right.
I've been here torturing a rabbit the entire time.
Yeah.
All right, Jay. Well, thanks for talking with me, and say hi to the wife and kids.
Yes, same to you, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Good luck.
All right.